Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for being with us. I am Cy Pellett, your host, joined in studio today by senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, Jimmy Akin. Hi, Jimmy. How are you?
Howdy, Cy.
This is a day I've been looking forward to. We're talking about Jimmy's brand new book, Teaching with Authority. And look at this, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
I have a copy.
Hey, wow.
Have you seen a copy yet?
This is the
what?
First one.
I get to put it into your hands.
Yeah,
there it is.
Awesome. This was supposed to be on my desk, and it wasn't. Cool.
Probably because they wanted me to surprise you with it.
Well, that's nice.
It looks good.
Yeah.
So I haven't had a chance to read it yet because it just came like
it's thick.
5 minutes before.
Got a lot of value for your information value for your purchase.
Right. So if you'd like to talk to Jimmy about his brand new book, our number is 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. But let me talk to you first about your book, Teaching with Authority. First, may I ask you,
mm-hmm.
I know that this has been a long time project
yes.
that you've wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember like what hit you, or was there a moment, or is this just over time you thought we need this?
Over time, I thought we need this. I've been, you know, working with church documents for 30 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of that time, I've been learning the techniques you need to use in order to process them and evaluate and weigh things and understand things correctly. And looking back on my own early development, I would say, wow, I did not know as much then as I do now.
Mm-hmm.
And I made mistakes, and I would look around and see on the internet people making a lot of mistakes in how they're dealing with church documents, including other apologists at times, and a lot of people getting alarmed unnecessarily about things in church documents or just misreading them. Just mm-hmm. flat misreading them and thinking they're saying something that they're not. And so gradually awareness dawned on me. There needs to be a resource that will not just answer individual questions about what does the church say on this, but that will implement the teach a man to fish principle.
Yeah.
So this book will teach you how to understand the church when it teaches. It does answer a lot of particular questions like what's the status of this and what's the status of that. But what it really does for you is show you how you can understand the church and its teachings for yourself, so you're not simply dependent on someone else and have I found the right person who's trustworthy and so forth.
Fair enough. So Teaching with Authority is the name of the book, the subtitle, How to Cut Through Doctrinal Confusion and Understand What the Church Really Says. It is out now. So what does that mean, Teaching with Authority?
Well, the title's an allusion to the Gospels, because one of the things that Mark and mentions in particular is that elsewhere in the New Testament, the same thing comes across. But it's mentioned that Jesus, in a unique way, taught with authority, not like the scribes.
Yes.
And people were amazed that he would teach with authority, unlike the way the scribes did. And so I talk about that. I talk about what it meant, how the scribes taught, how Jesus taught in contrast. And then I lay the groundwork for, okay, so where does the church get its teaching authority? Obviously, that's rooted in Jesus. And then, well, who within the church gets to manifest this teaching authority? How is that manifested? And I go through a whole bunch of stuff explaining about bishops and all the different ways they can teach both as individuals and as a group or as different groups, the role of the Pope, the role of the different departments over at the Holy See. Are all documents issued by the Holy See teaching documents, mm-hmm. for example?
Yeah.
So a lot of people have never even thought about that question.
Right.
And in fact, you know, you think with like the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, well, surely everything it publishes must be a teaching document. Guess what's not true?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can have the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, and they issue some documents that are not magisterial in nature, even though they talk about doctrinal subjects.
Right.
And so I tell you how to identify, like, is this a magisterial document or not?
Mm-hmm.
There are some key tests that need to be used to figure that out. Then once you've figured out, am I even looking at a magisterial document, what parts of it represent church teaching and what parts don't? Because I have a whole chapter almost devoted to, like, let's look at the different parts of a magisterial document that actually are not church teaching. And
can you give me an example, like in a church document?
Yeah, sure. So statements of a historical or scientific nature would be just one or two examples among many. I've got like almost a couple of dozen examples of types of statements that are not magisterial. But so if it says, you know, Giordano Bruno did this in 15 whatever, okay, that would be a statement of historical nature. That's not a church teaching.
Yes.
Or if someone says, you know, scientific consensus upholds evolution or global warming that we're about to be hit by a dark matter hurricane, which we are.
Record scratch.
Uh-huh.
We're about to be hit by a dark matter hurricane?
Yeah, and about to be in relative astronomical terms, but there's a dark matter hurricane headed our way. But all of that would be statements of don't worry, dark matter hurricanes are not as bad as regular matter hurricanes.
Oh.
But all of those would be statements of a scientific nature, not church teaching, even though they're found in a church document.
Fair enough. So you can't go back and say the church taught that Giordano Bruno said this or that, because that's not a
teaching. That's a teaching. That's a statement of a historical nature.
I got it. So even within a document, you got to be careful to find out what the church is teaching.
Then you got to read them correctly, and there are certain principles you need to use to do that, and all kinds of things.
It's hard for me to keep having this conversation because I'm so worried about the dark matter hurricane right now, but that's for another time. what do you think the biggest challenges are when people try to figure out what the church is teaching? Like, what are the challenges for them?
Well, we mentioned some of the biggest challenges, because there's a tendency to say anything the Pope says or anything anybody at the Vatican says is official church teaching.
Right.
And that's not true. Beyond that, there are a lot of distinctions that the church makes that people don't. One of the most common questions we get here on the show, I mean, there are a lot that we get regularly, but one of the regular questions we get is, what's the difference between a dogma and a doctrine?
Yes. Okay.
Another is you'll hear people making assertions like doctrine can't change. Well, that's not true. Doctrine can change. It's not always put in exactly that way, but it is quite possible for things that are teachings or doctrines at one point to change in various ways over time. And the book talks about those. The book also talks about how to deal with it when you think you may have a difficulty or a disagreement with church teaching.
Okay.
It talks about things like heresy and what heresy is and what it is not. Because you go online, and I'm even amazed when I see some people online who I think should know better saying, oh, well, X, Y, or Z is a heresy. And it's like, really? You surely should know the definition of heresy. Have you carefully parsed this?
Yeah.
And determined that it satisfies the conditions for heresy?
Right.
Because that's a loaded – I mean, that's like saying heresy is in the church is the equivalent of saying Nazi or in society.
Right. Yeah, right. And we do so much of that in our public life now. Everything is, well, you're a Nazi if you believe. Yeah, right.
And same thing.
So you're doing that with heresy and heretic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's just a lot of things that there's loads of misunderstandings, and the purpose of this book is to clear those away.
You said doctrines can change.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand that.
Okay.
Really. I think I was one of those people that was taught that doctrines can't change. So.
Well, you hear this phrase a lot.
Yeah.
You'll find a lot of people saying doctrine can't change. That's very common. I see other apologists at times saying that. I'm pleased to say I don't see other Catholic Answers apologists saying that, but I do see other apologists.
Are you saying our apologists are better?
I'm saying our apologists have achieved a certain level of proficiency in this area that does them credit.
Yeah, okay, good.
So you think about, well, what is a doctrine? The Latin word doctrina just means teaching.
Okay.
Okay. Even though you have popular authors sometimes saying things like doctrine can't change, you'll never find that in a Vatican document. You look at an actual magisterial document, they will at times talk about things that can and cannot change, but they never make a statement as blank and unqualified as doctrine can't change.
Okay.
They'll say things like there are immutable principles handed down from Christ and the apostles that cannot change.
Right.
Or the substance of the faith, the faith cannot change, or things like that.
Yes.
But they're not going to say teaching can't change, because it's obvious to anyone who knows anything about the history of theology that teaching changes in multiple ways. For example, the doctrine of the Trinity. If you look in the New Testament, the principles behind the doctrine of the Trinity are there, but they haven't been put all together. So you won't find a statement in the Trinity like God is one being in three persons.
Mm-hmm.
We won't find that. That language took time in the church to develop, and development is a kind of change. And so the existence of doctrinal development shows that there is a change in teaching in certain respects. In this case, it's the fleshing out of implications that formerly were latent but are now made explicit, made obvious and stated openly, and then put together in a clear and concise way.
Right.
And then distinguished from other similar options that may sound similar but actually would falsify aspects of the Trinity. So that process is one of the ways that doctrine changes.
888-318-7884 is our number. Jimmy Akin is our guest, and his brand new book, I mean brand new, he just saw it for the first time, is Teaching with Authority, How to Cut Through Doctrinal Confusion and Understand What the Church Really Teaches. That book, oh, by the way, is on sale right now, free shipping on Teaching with Authority through Wednesday of this week. Plus, you use the promo code CALIVE18 and you save 20%. Free copy to all callers who get on the air today. We'll kick it off, start getting this book out there today. So if you dial 888-318-7884 and get through and talk with Jimmy today, we're going to send you a free copy. If you'd like to buy your own copy at shop.catholic.com, free shipping until Wednesday, and the 20% off if you put in the promo code CALIVE18.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
We do our best to keep you, well, connected to all the events happening in our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith, from Rome to back home here in the U.S. and around the globe. It's also our goal to help each and every listener like you take this beautiful faith of ours out into the public square with great ideas on making a difference through engaging the culture.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, tomorrow morning, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, our guest, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, Jimmy Akin, and his brand new book, Teaching with Authority, is our topic. And the number, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I imagine another common question you apologists get is about infallibility. When is a teaching infallible?
Oh, yeah.
So what's the answer?
Well, how much time do we have here? Because there's a chapter on that.
Oh, so you got a whole chapter
on... Well, actually two. There's one on understanding the principles behind infallibility, and then there's another on like the tests and how they're applied. And I actually have a section. One of the things I do in this book is I will have case studies to illustrate the points I'm talking about. And so, you know, like one of the things that's been very, you know, controversial recently is the footnotes in Amoris Laetitiae.
Oh, right.
So yeah. When I'm talking about parts of magisterial documents, there's a section on footnotes. Guess what our case study covers?
Probably number 18. Is that it? Or no?
Not number 18. No. But yeah, it's the footnotes from Amoris Laetitiae as a way of seeing here's how footnotes can be consequential and how we need to pay attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like in the chapter on applying the test for infallibility, I talk about like let's actually take a look at the most commonly proposed examples of papal infallibility and evaluate them. Because there's as various scholars, including Avery Dulles, have pointed out, there's a list of a little more than 12 instances where a statement of a doctrinal nature has been proposed in a way that some scholars have thought this document contains infallible statements. But it's debated. I mean, you'll sometimes hear like, oh, there's only been two. And then you'll have the Immaculate Conception and the Assumption of Mary.
Right.
Those are the only two papal infallible doctrines that have been declared.
Yeah.
But then you'll have a kind of maximalist position that says, no, there's about 12 to 14 documents that technically contain infallible definitions of a doctrinal nature. And most scholars think it's somewhere in the middle, that it's like 6 to 8. And so I go through all of those like 14 or so documents and say, okay, let's take a look at it. And you know, let's apply the tests we've looked at to each of these documents and see what results we get.
888-318-7884 is the number. Teaching with Authority is the book. Of course, Jimmy Akin is our guest. And let us go to calls then. How about we start with Renee, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio in Omaha, Nebraska. Renee, you are first on with Jimmy Akin today. Your question, please.
Hi, good evening. Thank you so much for speaking with me. This is about Humanae Vitae.
Okay.
I believe it is a magisterial teaching by Pope Paul VI, St. Pope Paul VI.
Uh-huh.
And my question is, why do the bishops never talk about it? I mean, they tell you to do what your conscience says, and most people do not have a well-formed conscience.
Well, so this is a question that is somewhat outside the scope of my book. And I mean, I talk about Humanae Vitae in the book. For people who may not be familiar, Humanae Vitae is a 1968 encyclical that St. Paul VI issued on the subject of birth control within marriage. And so so it is definitely magisterial teaching. It's highly authoritative magisterial teaching. Some people argue it's even infallible magisterial teaching, although not because of the document itself, because the document itself doesn't contain the language that would be needed to promulgate a new definition. Instead, some people will say this is already infallible because of the way the magisterium has handled this question in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But however that may be, the subject obviously is one that is controversial in our society. The idea that spouses should not be contracepting and that people who aren't spouses shouldn't be having sex to begin with, those messages are not popular in our culture. And so there's a question when you're leading people to Jesus of how much of the truth do you hit them with all at once? I mean, Jesus himself in John's gospel tells the disciples, I have many things to tell you that you cannot now bear.
Yeah.
And he's telling that to the 12.
Yeah.
So obviously, if you're a bishop and you're trying to evangelize your diocese and you know many people are not where the church is on this, you may want to introduce them to the truth in a kind of gradual way and not make this the very first thing you tell people. So that may be a reason why, Renee, you may not be encountering bishops talking about this as much as you would like because you're already where the church is. And you already accept the church's teaching on this. And I know I have the same tendencies. It's like, I'm where the church is and its teachings. I would love to see this talked about more.
Right.
But I recognize that there can be pastoral judgments that have to be made in terms of how do we best lead people along. And I have some experience with that because I, you know, as an apologist, I deal with non-Catholics. And there's always – I always have to be thinking about how can I best facilitate this person coming closer to God. And my goal is to have them eventually accept the fullness of the Catholic faith. But that means I have to think carefully about what do we talk about now in this moment, because if I introduce subjects that are going to alienate them before I have a chance to introduce subjects that are going to draw them closer, then I'm not ultimately serving the cause of evangelization. I'm not doing good for their soul because I end up pushing them away before I even show them the things that would lead them to come closer. So that's one reason why you may not encounter as much as you'd like. I would say that a lot of bishops do talk about this, and a lot of priests do too. They don't necessarily do so with a high degree of frequency from the pulpit, but they do talk about these things. I mean, even Pope Francis, who has to be very careful in principle about what he says, he talks about, you know, Humanae Vitae and how it was a prophetic word from Paul VI and so forth. So you do have instances of that happening. I also have to say, though, in all frankness, there are people in the church who, after Humanae Vitae was released, opposed it. Mm-hmm. Because it was very unpopular, and they disagreed with it, and some of those people are still around or have been influenced by people who were around then, and some of them are silent on it because they disagree with it probably, but others aren't, and others agree with it wholeheartedly and do talk about it. It's just a question of how much is prudent to do at any given moment in time. And if you want to know from a particular bishop why he does or doesn't talk about it at a particular moment, that's something you'd have to ask him.
Vernay, thank you very, very much. Hang on the line. Marie will get your digits and we'll send you a copy of Teaching with Authority, Jimmy Akin's brand new book. We go now to Lauren. Lauren, I don't have a location, but we're happy to have you. Your question for Jimmy.
I'm in Atlanta listening on the Quest.
Oh, that's great. One of the great new Catholic radio stations in the country.
Yes, I'm glad to. New.
Well, thank you, Lauren, for sharing that. I'm glad we get to mention the Quest.
Yes. Well, my question is kind of a hardball question, maybe. Mm-hmm. Two things. When you're talking about authority, there's two in particular that really popped into my mind quickly, one of which is what type of authority would be given to a footnote in a document, for example, Emeritus Letitia. And the second one is, again, what type of authority would be given to the catechism insofar as I always thought the catechism was the gospel, was like the truth. Mm. And so that if something is changed in the catechism, does that make that also part of the truth? In specific, what we just happened with the death penalty.
Okay. So in regard to the first one, as we mentioned earlier, there's a whole section in the book, which now you'll be getting a copy of, that deals with the footnotes in Amoris Laetitiae. In assessing the weight of footnotes, we have to be careful, because there are actually several different types of footnotes that we have in church documents, and they play different functions. Some of them are nothing more than attempts to document where a quotation came from, you know, and there's no authority to that. It's just saying, here's where this quote came from. Mm-hmm. You know, like if a document quotes Teresa of Avila, there'll be a footnote saying, this edition of Teresa Avila's works, this page number. Mm-hmm. So that's not a doctrinal at all.
Yeah.
That's just informational. But then there are footnotes that do have important implications for doctrine and discipline in the church that are more substantive. Still, the fact that it's in a footnote rather than in the main text tells you that it's not as important as what's in the main text, because if it were as important as the main text, it would be in the main text. So when an author is composing and he deliberately puts something in a footnote, that's a signal that this is in some way, on some level, less important than what I'm saying right now in the main text. On the other hand, it doesn't mean you can just ignore it. And so you have to look at the language that's used in the footnote to say, okay, what level of authority does this have? It may be less than what's in the main text, but it doesn't mean it's nothing. So there are kind of two extremes to avoid there. One is overestimating the importance of footnotes. The other is underestimating the importance of footnotes. So I hope that helps as a general answer on the footnote question. We'll deal with the catechism when we come back from the break.
Okay, Lauren, hang on. We'll talk about what kind of authority the catechism has, and Jimmy will address your specific question about a change to the catechism. Teaching with Authority is the book. Jimmy Akin is the author, and we've got him for the whole hour. 888-31-TRUTH, our number, right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
As Catholics, we hear expressions like dogma, doctrine, deposit of faith, and of course, magisterium. And adding to the confusion, we have the ordinary magisterium and the extraordinary magisterium. So what if you were looking for one book written for the layman that explained what all these terms mean and how they interact in the lives of the Church and her faithful? The fact is, no such book existed until now. Brand new from Catholic Answers Press is Jimmy Akin's latest book, Teaching with Authority. Teaching with Authority is not about specific church teachings, it's about church teaching itself. A unique and long overdue resource for Catholics as well as those inquiring about the faith, Teaching with Authority will help deepen your understanding of what the church teaches by showing you how, why, and where she does. Get your copy of Teaching with Authority today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging onto the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Martin Luther and John Calvin, considered by many to be the fathers of the Protestant Reformation. But was it a reformation or a revolution? It's time you heard the real story. Catholic historian Steve Weinkopf says that much of what we know about this crucial period in the history of the Church is seen through a Protestant lens, and that the men credited with reform of the Church actually started a revolution that sought to destroy it. History comes alive as Professor Weinkopf takes an in-depth look at the period in history when this major change in the Church took place, and equally important, the men who sought to change it. Learn the real story. Get your copy of The Real Story of the Reformation today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Also available as an MP3.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Let's talk about it on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking about Jimmy Akin's brand new book, Teaching with Authority, How to Cut Through Doctrinal Confusion and Understand what the Church Really Teaches Today. And we're talking about it with its author, Jimmy Akin. Jimmy, thanks for being with us this hour.
My pleasure.
Always nice to have you. Lauren, Lauren is in Atlanta, listening on The Quest. Mm-hmm. And you addressed one part of her question, but she had also asked about changes to the catechism.
Yeah. So, and she mentioned that she'd previously regarded the catechism as just like the gospel. And so if changes occur to it, it's like kind of unsettling. It'd be like changes occurring to the gospel.
Right.
So the answer is that it's understandable. You might think that way. The catechism has been used as a reference point in a really big way since it was first issued. It kind of closed a chapter on a certain kind of doctrinal confusion that was in the Church, and it's been a really solid anchor for people subsequently. And we really needed something like the Catechism after all the doctrinal confusion in the 70s and 80s. So it's an extremely important work. It's not meant, though, to be from front to back infallible. This is something that we can know through several lines of evidence. First one is it's a catechism. It's not. It's and a catechism is meant to be a basic summary of the faith.
Okay.
So that's fundamentally what the catechism is. It's a basic summary of the faith. And catechisms, unless the Pope were to issue a catechism and say this is infallible, it doesn't make it infallible. Now, it's going to contain things that are infallible, certain doctrines like Jesus is God, God is a Trinity, Jesus rose from the dead. All of those things are infallible, but not because the catechism says them. The catechism is a summary, just like any ordinary catechism that someone wrote would mention those things because they're part of the faith, and those things are infallible teachings, but not because Pastor Bob's catechism says they are.
Right.
So that means we have to look beyond the genre, because ordinarily a catechism is not going to be infallible, but it will contain infallible teachings, but not everything in it's going to be infallible. So we then have to look and say, well, what did John Paul II have to say about the value of the catechism? And he said it's a reliable norm. He did not say it's infallible. He said it's a reliable norm for the teaching of the faith.
Mm-hmm.
That and the place to look for that is it's in the in Fide Depositum, which is the apostolic constitution whereby he promulgated the catechism. So that's where he talks about it. But then we have an even clearer articulation of the doctrinal value of the catechism from Cardinal Ratzinger, later Benedict XVI, who was the man who oversaw the composition of the catechism. So what he has to say, and I quote this in my book, is that the individual propositions that are in the catechism have no greater weight than they already had.
Okay.
So if the catechism is talking about something that was already infallible, well, it's still infallible. If it's talking about something that was authoritative but not infallible, well, then it's authoritative but not infallible.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that the church was proposing kind of tentatively,
mm-hmm.
then it's still tentative. And then there are the things in the catechism that aren't even doctrinal at all. Like we mentioned, historical and scientific statements. We have both of those in the catechism.
Yes, right.
So you have to look at each individual statement in the catechism and evaluate it independently. So that means that that number one, that we shouldn't assume that the catechism is infallible from front to back. It's not. It is exactly what John Paul II said. It's a sure norm for the teaching of the faith. But that doesn't relieve us of having to look at each passage individually. When we therefore look at various passages, we have to say, okay, what's the level of authority that the church is investing in a particular passage? And we have to recognize that doctrinal development is possible on any given subject, even dogmas, which are the most solemn teachings the church has. Those can develop in the sense of we can have a greater understanding of them. But it's certainly possible for things of a lesser nature to develop in a variety of ways. And over the last several popes, from John Paul II to Francis, there's been a new way the church has been articulating its view on the death penalty that has taken a progressively more negative attitude. And Pope Francis's altering of a passage dealing with the death penalty is a continuation of that trend, but it's no different in principle than what happened when John Paul II altered exactly the same passage.
Yeah,
because the catechism originally came out in 1992, but then John Paul II issued an encyclical, Evangelium Vitae, in 1996, and then that passage of the catechism got revised in light of Evangelium Vitae. And so it's obviously this is a passage where the church's articulation of its teaching in this area has undergone change in the last 20, 30 years, and that's being reflected in the catechism as it's kept up to date with that.
Lauren, so happy to get your call from 1160 a.m. in Atlanta there, the Quest, and thank you so much for your question. If you hang on the line, Marie will get your digits and we'll send you a copy of Jimmy's book, Teaching with Authority. We go now to Giovanni calling from Canada. Giovanni, happy to have you with us. Your question for Jimmy.
Hi, Jimmy. I was just wondering, when you go through some of the documents in the church, mm-hmm. and you seem to find that some documents contradict each other, mm-hmm. is the newer document held more valid than the previous?
More valid is not exactly the way I'd put it, but you're expressing an insight that's genuine. And I have a whole chapter, actually, on how do you relate older teachings to newer ones. What do you do when there seems to be a conflict? And there are a number of ways of dealing with that. It's not simply a matter of saying, well, the new overrules the old. There are several other options that can apply. And one of the principles that I talk about in terms of reading church documents is you need to read them in continuity with each other. And so that means if you have two documents that look like they might be contradicting each other, you need to make a careful study and say, well, are they really, or is there some way that these can fit together? And you may run into situations where, yeah, absolutely, they can fit together, even though it may not have looked that way at first. And I cite an example in this chapter. One of the case studies is of the language that Vatican II uses about being part of the church compared to the language that Pius XII used about being a member of the church. And even though the language sounds very different in Vatican II, if you read it carefully, it actually fits with what Pius XII had said. They're just using terms in a somewhat – they're using somewhat different language, but they're not – disagreeing in substance. On the other hand, you do have a genuine difference between that can't be resolved in that way between an older and a newer document, then there is a general principle that the newer document is going to be the one you want to give more weight to under the assumption that the Holy Spirit is guiding the church into a greater understanding of the truth that God gave us over time. That's one of the things Jesus says, is that the Holy Spirit will guide you into all truth. And so that's a process that continues through doctrinal development throughout church history. And so all things being equal, you would expect the newer documents to reflect a more refined understanding of teaching under the influence of the Holy Spirit. But there are exceptions to that, because members of the magisterium can get out of sync with the Holy Spirit. They can make mistakes. And so it's not always the case that the newer document is going to be the one that better reflects church teaching. And there's a famous example of that from the Middle Ages, where Pope John the 22nd had been entertaining ideas about the afterlife such that, for example, nobody gets into heaven prior to the last day and mm-hmm. nobody goes to hell prior to the last day, that were different than the church's historic understanding of those points. And it turned out he was wrong, and his successor infallibly defined that he was wrong. Mm-hmm. So that's a case where if you were looking at, ooh, the Pope gave a sermon where he just said nobody gets into heaven until after the last judgment, that's newer than what has previously been said. But that didn't mean the homilies true. Where he said this were right. It turned out he was wrong.
Giovanni, we'll leave it there. If you'd like to get your copy of the book, hang on, and Marie will get your address. 888-318-7884 is our number. We're talking about Jimmy's new book, Teaching with Authority. I will remind you one more time, store-wide Christmas sale today and tomorrow only. All Catholic Answers CDs and Catholic Answers Classics are half price. Just visit the CD and Catholic Answers Classics categories, and you get your savings on those. You can also save money on hundreds of other items. Just put in the promo code CALIVE18. when you check out, and you get 20% off on all kinds of books, DVDs, CDs, MP3s, ebooks. Visit shop.catholic.com and get your savings today.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
Pope Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
What makes me happy is listening to Catholic radio. I'm by myself a lot, had a concussion as a child, and I can't see very well. But I do work, I go to church, and I'm an on-fire convert. And as a child, more or less, I've learned to have a good sense of humor whenever I can. And I'm very appreciative of everything I have, and especially Catholic radio.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin, our guests, we're discussing his brand new out today book, Teaching with Authority, How to Cut Through Doctrinal Confusion and Understand What the Church Really Says. Let us go next to Albert. Albert, your question for Jimmy.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My question relates to, and I think I understand this, but when the Pope just speaks generally, you know, gives an opinion pretty much, and no matter what it is, I talk to a lot of people, and they think everything he says, that's what the church teaches. You know, he's made some comments here and there, and then I get the comment, he's just a real liberal, you know, not to get into all that, but I don't know how to explain that to them.
Yeah, so whether the Pope is speaking authoritatively depends on what his intention is. Popes can invest zero doctrinal authority in something they say, in which case it's just an opinion, all the way up to this is infallible church teaching. And they do the latter very infrequently. As a practical matter, what one needs to do, and again, this is all dealt with in the book, is look at the context in which a pope is saying something. That's usually your first clue, not your only clue, but it's your first clue to how authoritative something is that the pope is saying. If, for example, he's giving an interview to the press, interviews are not considered magisterial documents. They're not official exercises in the church's teaching. Now, if he says something in the context of an interview that is church teaching, like he says, oh yeah, Jesus is God or Jesus is the Messiah, well, those are church teachings, and so those are things that are authoritative even though he mentioned them in an interview. But they're just as authoritative if Cy Kellett says Jesus is God or Jesus is the Messiah. You know, anybody can articulate those truths, and they are truths that need to be respected as part of the faith. But it's not because they're in a papal interview that they're authoritative. They already were authoritative. So interviews that the Pope gives or press statements or things like that are not exercises in the church's teaching authority. Then if you're looking at a document that a pope has released, let's say the text of a homily that he preached, well, that's kind of on the low end of authority. And there's a whole spectrum of documents that get progressively more authoritative in teaching matters as you move up that spectrum. So, for example, encyclicals are teaching documents that are quite authoritative compared to papal homilies.
Yeah,
and
right.
So what you want to do as a first step, not your only step, but your first step in assessing is this an authoritative statement, is say what kind of statement is it? What is it, just an interview, something he said on an airplane? Is it an interview he gave to a newspaper? Is it a homily he preached? Is it an encyclical? Exactly what are we dealing with here? And that's kind of your starting point for figuring out, is it an authoritative statement in terms of teaching or not?
Okay, Albert?
Yeah, I get it. Thank you.
All right, Albert, hang on. Marie will get your address if you'd like. We'll send you a copy of Teaching with Authority, Jimmy's brand new book. We go now to Patricia, who's right here in San Diego with us, watching on YouTube. Happy to have you with us from YouTube, Patricia. Your question for Jimmy.
I just wanted to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
Both of you. I watch your show all the time. So.
Awesome. Thanks, Patricia.
I have a question. It's about the Eucharist when it falls to the floor. Mm-hmm. Is there any church teaching on this, what to do?
So this gets into an interesting area that I also talk about in the book. It's the difference between doctrine and practice. In terms of doctrine, the church is going to say that if a host drops to the floor, that doesn't cause the real presence to go away. And so that means that you're going to need to treat the host as if it's still Jesus, because it still is. But then there's the question of what do you do in practice? You know, on the mm-hmm. teaching level, we can establish the general principle. But then there's the, what are the prescribed practices for when this happens? What should we do? And that's a matter of discipline rather than doctrine. This is interesting because disciplines and doctrines often have some overlap. Like the doctrine that adultery is wrong implies the discipline of marital fidelity.
Oh, yes, right.
And so so this is a case where the doctrine of the ongoing real presence implies that something special needs to be done if mm-hmm. a host falls to the floor. You don't treat it like it's just a piece of bread. But what specifically, the way we handle that is governed by liturgical law. And so in that particular case, assuming there's nothing else affecting the situation, that it's just a normal situation where someone's dropped a host onto the floor, you pick up the host and someone needs to consume it. If there's something weird, like it got in some substance that makes it inedible, then you dissolve it in water and you pour the water down the sacrarium. But ordinarily, the host gets dropped, you pick it up, and someone consumes it as normal. And historically, there's been a regulation that you want to wash the place with water in order to catch any and dissolve any particles that may have come off the Eucharist, and then you pour that water down the drain. However, as long as the particles are not big enough to retain the appearance of bread, so if it just looks like a tiny speck of, you know, like flour or something, mm-hmm. then according to St. Thomas Aquinas, the real presence is not there because it no longer has – the appearances of bread are no longer present.
Ah, yeah.
And so my memory is that in modern liturgical law, the washing with water is not always necessary in these cases.
Thanks very much for those questions, Patricia. If you hang on, if you'd like, we'll send you a free copy of Jimmy's book, Teaching with Authority. Let's go to Brendan. Brendan's in Michigan listening on Holy Family Radio. Brendan, your question for Jimmy.
Yeah, my question, thanks for taking the call, is about, it seems like there's a movement by Pope Francis to give some authority to synods and having them, when they have their meetings, they produce a document, mm-hmm. and that document becomes official. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. So this is actually not not really different than the way the synods of bishops were originally envisioned. When they were set up by Paul VI, they had the ability to issue documents in their own name. And it became obvious they were meeting for such a short time that was impractical. And the Synod of Bishops only ever actually issued one document in its own name.
Oh.
And so they fell into – and that was like back in around 1970. And so instead, they shifted to a model where they would make a document for the Pope to consider, giving him their advice on whatever subject the Synod was meeting concerning. And then it would be up to him to prepare a what's called a post-synodal, so after the synod, apostolic exhortation, which would be an exercise of his magisterium as Pope, but based on recommendations from the bishops who met at the synod. And for a long time, these the documents they would prepare, the advisory documents that they would give to the Pope, were kept secret. And because it wasn't known, is the Pope going to accept their advice or not? So why publicize it? But then in the reign of Benedict XVI, it became normal to publicize the advisory document. He's looking at it and Benedict is looking at it and saying, I don't have a problem with this. It's let people know what the bishops recommended. Mm-hmm. And then he would go on to prepare an apostolic exhortation as well. Well, Pope Francis has now said – and what Pope Benedict could have done at that time is say, you know what, guys? I totally agree with this. I sign off on this. I approve it, and that makes it part of my teaching magisterium as Pope.
Right.
And just like he could cut out the apostolic exhortation stage and just go directly to say, you know, I like this advice. I'm adding my name to it, so it's now part of my teaching ministry. And essentially, that's all that Pope Francis has done here. He's just made it explicit that he has this option of if he agrees with everything the bishop said, well, he can just add his own name to it, at which point he's teaching what they said, and that makes it part of the Pope's teaching ministry, just like the apostolic exhortation he otherwise would write would be. So really, that's all he's done. He's not given the synod any authority. He's just saying, I can approve what they did, in which case it becomes part of my body of teaching.
How's that, Brendan?
That's great. Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Very good. I think we can get more in here, so we'll keep trying. Let's try Anonymous on YouTube. Anonymous, are you there?
Yeah.
Can you ask your question real quickly?
I was wondering if there were any official teachings that were later tweaked or revised.
Official teachings? Sure.
Yeah.
There have been almost every doctrine has undergone development of one sort or another in terms of greater clarity and how it relates to other doctrines. So virtually everything has developed since the first century in one way or another. After 2,000 years, we have new insights on almost everything that have been fleshed out. In terms of something like being reversed or losing authority that it used to have, an example of that would be something like the idea that it's impossible for a child who's unbaptized, who dies, to experience the beatific vision. That was something that was part of the church's common teaching, so it was never infallible. Mm-hmm. But over the course of time, the church has had a greater sense of God wants to make it a practical possibility for everyone to be saved. So there may be ways that God could provide sanctifying grace even to people, including children, dying without baptism. And so it's no longer part of the church's common teaching that this can't happen. So that's an illustration of a teaching that used to be somewhat authoritative. It was never infallible, but it was somewhat authoritative, but it's now dropped out of that category of authoritative teachings.
Okay, Anonymous?
I was wondering if there was any infallibles that were later.
No, that's one of the things. If something has been taught infallibly, that means it's guaranteed to be true, and things that are guaranteed to be true cannot change. What can happen is we can understand them more precisely than we used to, or we can figure out new things that kind of put them in a different context, so that we recognize this doesn't have all the implications we thought it did, but they never get just flat out reversed.
Jimmy Akin's brand new book is Teaching with Authority, How to Cut Through Doctrinal Confusion and Understand What the Church Really Says. Brand new means it's out today. Jimmy, thanks for a very fine hour. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Si. My pleasure.
I want to take just a minute to remind you that if you want to get Jimmy's book and you didn't get through to us today on the phone, it's free shipping through Wednesday. Plus, you use the promo code CALIVE18 when you check out. And you will get 20% off your copy. That's when you go to shop.catholic.com. So between now and Wednesday, go to shop.catholic.com. Use the promo code CALIVE18 and get 20% off. And if you get that order in by Wednesday, you're going to get free shipping on the book. That's it for today. We'll see you tomorrow for 2 hours of Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live.